Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Network Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Admiralty when we come back. You know, many of the lessons that you hear on this program are just a small part of my two-week school on courtroom strategy and procedure, and this school includes lessons ranging from what to do and what not to do at the arrest or when you receive a complaint, a summons, or a citation. And you'll learn how to make a chronology of the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence, just like the police do. And you'll learn how to conduct a hearing, present evidence, cross-examine witnesses, ask questions, make opening and closing statements, and enter exhibits into evidence, write motions, briefs, affidavits, and asseverations. And I don't just cover what goes on in the courtroom either. You'll learn preliminary procedures, arraignments, bail setting, what papers to file, and how to put exculpatory evidence in the record, and how to present your legal and lawful positions, what issues are appealable, and how to preserve those appealable issues for appellate review. Now, there are 28 essential elements to master in courtroom strategy and procedure, and you'll learn all of them here at the law school in this class. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure is also available on compact disc for adult home education. Now, if you're online, you can just go to the website georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, and click onto the email machine and send an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're to that point in the program where we have to ask the question, well, just what is the answer then to Admiralty? If there's no solution to it, then we didn't need to talk about it in the first place. But there's a solution to Admiralty, just like there's a solution to Flo's Whorehouse. You know, there's a solution to cancer. There's a solution to heart attack and stroke and high cholesterol. There's a cause for every effect, and there's a solution that takes care of that cause. Admiralty isn't any different. Admiralty is a foreign and alien ideology to our Constitution and Bill of Rights, but it was entered into as a part and parcel of the law of nations because other nations had an admiralty jurisdiction. We came to believe that we needed one. And since other nations dealt in limited liability, I guess our politicians during the 200 years of our existence decided, well, if they've got it, we need it. We have had a problem throughout our history of trying to adopt the practices and principles, the politics and the religions of the nations around us when we've been specifically instructed not to do that. Don't do that. I guess it's easier to get along when you go along. Well, admiralty is civil law jurisdiction, and once again, the common law is not accessible in courts of admiralty. As J. Reuben Clark said, there's a constant ideological conflict between civil and common law for the control of society. And this constant struggle has been going on since the Garden of Eden, and it will go on until the Second Coming. And then there's a choice to be made. You can choose admiralty, or you can choose the common law. And remember, the common law now is predicated upon the Ten Commandments. Admiralty is predicated upon the Ten Planks of the Communist Manifesto. And the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto is simply a reincarnation of the ancient Babylonian mystery religion. It's been around for 5,000 years. It's been around since the Garden of Eden. And we have, for some reason, adopted it and fondled with it, played with it, cuddled with it, loved it. And we have been burned by it, destroyed by it, eaten alive by it, and kicked in the ass by it for 5,000 years. You know, you'd think that we'd learn something with that much experience behind us. But, you know, the average Joe Sixpack, if you came up to him and hit him up alongside the head with admiralty, he would know what the hell you're talking about. Wouldn't have a clue. Now, Judge Johnson made an observation back in 1827 in a case called Ramsey versus Allegory. And it was over this very subject of admiralty. And he said, I concur with my brethren in sustaining the decree below, but I cannot consent to place my decision upon the grounds on which they have placed theirs. I think that it's high time to check this silent and stealing progress of the admiralty in acquiring jurisdiction to which it has no pretensions. Unfounded doctrines ought at once to be met and put down, and dicta as well as decisions that cannot bear examinations ought not to be evaded and permitted to remain on the books to be commented upon and acquiesced in by courts of justice, or to be read and respected by those whose opinions are to be formed upon books. It affords facilities for giving an undue bias to public opinion, and I will add, of interpolating doctrines which belong not to the law. Cited from Ramsey versus Allegory at 12 Wall 611. That was Judge Johnson back in 1827. He went on to say, I have now said a great deal on the subject, and I could not have said less and discharged the duty which I feel that I owe to the community. I am fortifying a weak point in the wall of the Constitution. Every advance of the Admiralty is a victory over the common law, a conquest gained upon the trial by jury. The principles upon which alone this suit could have been maintained are equally applicable to one half of the commercial contracts between citizen and citizen. Once establish the rights here claimed, and it may bring back with it all of the Admiralty usurpations of the 15th century. In England, there exists a controlling power, but here there is none. Congress has indeed given a power to issue prohibitions to a district court when transcending the limits of the Admiralty jurisdiction. But who is to issue a prohibition to us if we should ever be affected with a partiality for that Admiralty jurisdiction? I therefore hold that we are under a peculiar obligation to restrain the Admiralty jurisdiction within its proper limits, and that in case of contracts it has no jurisdiction at all in personam, except as incident to the exercise of its jurisdiction in rem. And previously, under the title of jurisdiction, the Baines case was used to describe the classes of jurisdictions, and Judge Baldwin well knew the evils of Admiralty, and here's what Judge Baldwin also added. He said, it is vain to contend that the Seventh Amendment will be any efficient guarantee for the right in suits at common law if an Admiralty jurisdiction exists in the United States, commensurate with that, and commensurate with what is claimed by the claimant in this case. Its assertion is, in my opinion, a renewal of the contest between legislative power and royal prerogative, the common and the civil law striving for mastery, the one to secure, the other to take away the trial by jury. Judicial power must first annul the Seventh Amendment or judicial subtlety, transform a suit at common law into a case of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction before I take cognizance of such a case as this without a jury. Again, cited from Baines. Boys and girls, clear back in the early 1800s, our Supreme Court was well aware of this conflict between the common law and admiralty. Well aware. I would submit to you that out of 300 million people in the United States today, you'd be hard-pressed to find a million people out of a population of that size that could tell you the difference between the two or where they originated or what the problem with admiralty is. It's not even on the horizon or on the agenda. It's not going to be stopped. Admiralty has clearly won the hearts and minds of the American people, and I would submit that you Canadians and Australians and Western Europeans are just as much taken by this whole concept of admiralty and communism. Now, you know, you can call it communism, you can call it socialism, you can call it admiralty, you can call it the Roman civil law. It is the diametric opposite to the Ten Commandments, the exact opposite, 180-degree opposite from the Bill of Rights in our Constitution. Now, you know, admiralty has a place, just like the Uniform Code of Military Justice has a place in the military. Just like on an airplane, I would concede that an airplane and a ship are different places for us when we're traveling, and that somebody has to be in charge. There has to be a strong hand from someplace. But when you apply that strong hand from someplace to our everyday business contracts, to our businesses, our marriages, to our children, to our recordings, to our everyday way of life, it destroys every freedom and every concept of liberty that is established by the Ten Commandments and God Almighty Himself. Now he went on to say, by attempting to introduce the admiralty jurisdiction of the civil law, a foundation is laid for intermittable conflicts of jurisdiction between the courts of the state and the courts of the union. Admiralty courts have no in personam jurisdiction unless there is first an in rem jurisdiction. And again, quoting from the Ramsey case, he went on to say, I have quoted Chaddock's case and Lay and Burley's case in which the Court of Admiralty was expressly prohibited from proceeding in personam in behalf of material men. I should think here I have a right to demand, if from the whole library of law books, and God knows we have enough of them already, camel loads, a single attempt to proceed in personam upon a contract in the Admiralty except for seamen's wages, since the date of the resolutions of 1682 can be extracted. Adjudged cases cannot be found because, since the antique cases to which I have referred, the right has been abandoned, and dicta enough can be produced, and some of those very modern. Godbolt speaks of the process in rem as the only process issuable in the first instance from the Admiralty. And in the addition of Abbott, which I have quoted in a note upon which a case of Hoare versus Clement on page 136, a case arising on a contract for an assessor, it is admitted that the Court of Admiralty had no jurisdiction over the person in that case. And in Johnson versus Shippen, in which a libel was filed against Shippen owners on a hypothecation for money borrowed abroad on their voyage, it was argued that if suit lay against the owners at all, it lay at common law, and a prohibition was granted as to the suit against the owners, but refused as to the vessel. In Ball versus Trelawney, Trelawney had sued in the Admiralty on a foreign contract in personam, obtained judgment, and Ball was in jail. The latter brought his action under the statute of Henry VI, recovered double damages, and was discharged on habeas corpus on the ground of being in confinement in a cause coram non judis. In Brown, volume 2, he lays down the rule in these terms, that the general rule, however, at present is that the Admiralty acts only in rem, and that no person can be subject to that jurisdiction but by his consent, expressed by his entering into a stipulation. All right. Now I'm going to put a little mark around that. Let's pause here and talk a little bit about this in rem and in personam jurisdiction. In personam is talking about your person. Can you be brought in here against your will and over your objection in a proceeding in which you have not contracted into and have not agreed to? And the answer is no, but they're doing it to us every day. Now, a guy that's got a driver's license who's hauled into the traffic court, he belongs in the traffic court in an in personam, in an admiralty action, because he's got seaman's papers and he joined the club. But those of us that do not have driver's licenses ought not to be drawn into those in personam hearings, in those in personam admiralty processes, because we have not volunteered into it and we're exercising our God-given rights. But that's what we've degenerated into. And so you're complaining now about the People's Republic of Michigan or the People's Republic of California. The judges themselves in these lower courts probably do not have a good understanding of admiralty and common law. And that's because up until 1942, when an incoming student at Harvard walked into the law school, he started his legal education with Blackstone's commentaries and the book of Hebrews in the New Testament of the Bible until 1942, when they took the Bible out of the Harvard Law School. Now, you cannot divorce the common law. You can't divorce God and the law of God, the Mosaic law, from our rights and our institutions and our freedoms, because if you do, you rely upon the only thing left, and that is the vote. When you throw God out and you throw the law of God out of your lives and out of your legal system, the only thing left you've got is the vote or revolution. I guess we could revolt. Now, fortunately for all of us, there is a God in heaven that still protects the rights of those who obey God and keep his commandments. Fortunately, we still have the First Amendment to our Constitution that guarantees us the right to free exercise. You can make a choice. You can choose to obey God and keep his commandments, or you can choose to obey Bail and the admiralty jurisdiction and the statutes of Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein and the Ted Kennedy and the gang in the Congress. A gang, by the way, that has now become so corrupt. You know, we elected Republicans in 1994 to clean up the graft and corruption that had been brought on by about 40 years of Democratic control of the Congress. You remember that? You have more graft, more corruption, more bribery today in 2006 than you had in 1990 under the Democrats. And that's because the Democrats think small. The Republicans think big. Yes, it's true. The Democrats were criminals. They were crooks. They were liars. They were thieves. They were bribe takers. But they were pikers compared to the Republicans. Absolute pikers. And any concept that you're going to vote these bad guys like Tom DeLay out and vote good guys in, I think, is wishful thinking on the scale of the Wizard of Oz. Just plain nonsense. Now, there's a solution to this, but it's going to be based upon individual initiative. Each and every one of you who wants to free yourself from admiralty can do that. At least at this juncture of time, you still can. How that's going to play out over the next 10 or 20 or 30 years, I can't tell you. I'm not a prophet. Now, going on, Johnson went on to say, and he said, and even this mode of subjecting the person through the medium of a stipulation, it's well known, was itself registered at first and acquiesced and only on the ground of its being an indispensable incident to the exercise of the jurisdiction in rem. Now, jurisdiction in rem is over what we call subject matter. Courts have jurisdiction in rem over subject matter, but ought not to have jurisdiction over persons in personam. Now, under the common law, you have to have a grand jury to bring you forward to give the king permission to try you. Now, that was our system that dated back to the congregation of Israel in the wilderness under Moses. The whole concept of our grand juries has now been corrupted. The theory behind it was fairly straightforward. If the king wants to prosecute you and I, a commoner, he has to get permission from us, the commoners. So when we've got a murderer in our midst, And the king says, hey, we got this murderer over here, and we want to prosecute this guy. The king brings his allegations before 23 members of the congregation, and we listen to him. And we decide whether or not we're going to turn our commoner over to the king for prosecution or not, whether it's for murder, or whether it's for wearing your seatbelt, or whether it's for getting a driver's license. Now the king has usurped our prerogatives. In fact, the Supreme Court of the United States, in 1905, in a case called Hale versus Hinkle, made an observation. They said, the grand jury is nothing more today, this is 1905 now, nothing more today than a prosecutorial tool. It's a tool used by prosecutors to take commoners right out of society and prosecute them in an admiralty court in persona, which is precisely what these judges are warning us about back in the 1820s, saying, hey, wait a minute, this admiralty over here is necessary on the high seas, but it sure as hell isn't necessary in downtown Chicago or in downtown Cincinnati. And if they can regulate and control on the waterways inland in the United States, they can regulate and control under the Commerce Clause on your highways of tar, in your hospitals. That's what your birth certificate's all about. You ever go to the hospital and have a baby, and some nurse is jumping on your back, handing you all this paperwork when you're still under sedatives and telling you to sign here? To sign your child over to the state. Give your child to the state. Don't record him in your family Bible. Don't keep track of your own genealogy. Let the state do that for you. You know, you've gotten to the point now in America where the state does everything for us. In fact, we have been taught and trained like the pigs of the Okefenokee to go to the state every time we get a bellyache or every time we're hungry. Americans are no longer able to take care of themselves. If you turned an American loose with a live chicken, he'd starve to death and make a pet out of it. He couldn't kill that chicken, pluck it, cook it, and eat it. He has to go to McDonald's to get McNuggets. In Kebbell's reports on page 500, quoted by Brown, it is expressly said that without a stipulation, the Admiralty has no jurisdiction at all over the person. And here the question is whether there can be found anywhere in the books a case in which an action in personam could be maintained in the admiralty, wherein the action in rem was denied to that court. No such case can be found. And the reason is obvious. That right alone would take away the admiralty jurisdiction altogether, since it would follow that the right might be pursued at the common law. And the case of seaman's wage is always accepted, which I regard as positive law, and which indeed has been supposed by some to be retained by the admiralty under the authority given that court by statute of one of the Henrys to control mariners in regard to the amount of their wages. Well, let the cases be searched from the remotest period down to the time of Mentone and Gibbons, and the ground of prohibition and of recovery under the second of Henry IV will uniformly be found to be the competency of the common law to enforce the contract. And this is the principle by which even their jurisdiction in rem is controlled, and hence it follows that in no case in which they are prohibited from proceeding in rem can they have the action in personam. Regarding contracts of adhesion, what boots it that I am protected by that Constitution from having the obligation of my contracts violated if the legislative power can create a contract for me or render binding upon me a contract which was null and void in its creation. Now take a look at this. The legislature enacts a law and says you have to buy insurance whether you want to or not. You have to have auto insurance whether you want to buy it or not. That's not a free choice. You do it because you're coerced into doing it. What the hell greater tyranny can there be than a legislative body and a judicial system working together in a jurisdiction called admiralty to compel you against your will and over your objection to do that which you do not want to do? You call that freedom? You call America the freest nation on earth? Have you got your head up the wrong end of your anatomy? What the hell is free about that? And you're over there in Iraq trying to enforce that upon those Iraqis and call it democracy? No, you're not spreading freedom and liberty to the Iraqis. You're bringing American tyranny upon the Iraqis. You're bringing the admiralty upon them. Hell, those Iraqis over there didn't have an income tax until we brought our military occupation in there and imposed it upon them. The Iraqis didn't have gun control over there until we brought gun control over there and imposed it upon them. Brought upon the Iraqis the same tyranny that we brought upon ourselves through this process of admiralty jurisdiction. Now, to give efficacy to void contract is not, it is true, violating a contract. But it is doing infinitely worse. It is advancing to the very extreme of that class of arbitrary and despotic acts which bear upon individual rights and liberties, and against the whole of which the construction, the Constitution, was most clearly intended to interpose a protection commensurate with this evil. Cited from Satterley versus Matheson. Judge Johnson assenting, but he came back and he said, now listen, I'm going to agree with the outcome of the case because it's the correct decision. But the reasoning that's being used to create this outcome over here is clearly in error. Clearly in error. Now, let's take a look at a hypothetical voyage. You know, Let's suppose you're in San Francisco short of funds, and you hear about a fantastic voyage on a ship about to set sail from port with guaranteed security and profits for all when you sign up for the voyage. And let's also assume that material facts about this voyage have been withheld from you in order to induce you to sign up, and that the contemplated voyage was in violation of the positive law of the law of nations and contrary to the meaning and intent of the United States Constitution and the law of God. Now the ship sets sail in the middle of the night when no one is watching from the shore. And after a week at sea, you discover the concealment of material facts, and then you determine that you are on an unlawful voyage. So you go to the captain, and you inform the captain of your newly discovered evidence and demand your constitutional and common law rights as a United States citizen. Now the captain has no jurisdiction to hear your common law complaint. His only jurisdiction is under maritime law. His sole responsibility is to ensure the safety of this voyage under maritime law. And he sees you as a possible threat to that voyage. And he may fear that you might start influencing other members of the crew and mutiny might result. To him, his duty is clear. He must mete out some degree of punishment to instill in you and in all members of the crew a fear of joining in or participating in any action which may jeopardize this voyage or the captain's powers. Therefore, he may offer you one of two alternatives. He may say to you, you can go back to work and continue to perform, and I will forgive you for this uncontrolled outburst and allow you to remain on this voyage so long as you agree to pay a penalty which I shall determine and impose upon you, or if you refuse these terms, I will order you confined to the brig for the duration of the voyage. And that's precisely what you face when you go into divorce court, when you go into traffic court. It's an admiralty summary process, what you face when you go into a military tribunal. That's why the president wants to try all of those prisoners in Guantanamo under admiralty special commissions. Hell, he doesn't even want to give them the uniform code of military justice. He wants a kangaroo court in which he can control the outcome, which is the same kind of tyranny that we rebelled against under King George. Why in hell would we want to impose that upon somebody else? How can we sit here and say, well, we want to mete out justice, but we want to mete out a special kind of justice for our enemies that we disagree with? And that's hypocrisy to the nth degree. That's the same BS you know that we offered to the blacks. We said, well, we believe in equality for everybody but blacks back in 1787. You know, we believe that all men are created equal unless you're black. Of course, then you're not created quite equal, just a little bit less. Now, we've rejected that kind of nonsense. Now, what happens here with this admiralty? Why are we saying to our president, well, or why are we ignoring our president and saying, well, go ahead and do what you have to do? And let me give you a mid-course reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you're interested in more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, let's go to the website georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about admiralty and a hypothetical voyage. You know, if you were on this hypothetical voyage, and all of us are on a hypothetical voyage, in fact, it's more than hypothetical, it's a real voyage. It's the great ship America. The great ship America. The politics and the processes that you see going on around you are based upon the Roman civil law and admiralty jurisdiction. And George Bush is our captain. And George Bush is directing operations. Now, if we speak out to the captain and we say, Captain, we disagree with what you're doing over here. This captain has wartime powers now. Wartime powers. Granted to him by Congress. He can suspend the writ of habeas corpus tomorrow morning. He's got that power. And he can institute martial law tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. And I don't have any reason to believe that he's not going to do just that at some point in the future. And in fact, when he gets to the point where he can no longer be reelected, I think that's just exactly what he's going to do, just like Adolf Hitler did. Oh, we'll have elections, just like we did in 2000 and 2004, elections that are done primarily on computers that have no paper trail and that can be controlled. You know, Joe Stalin was a very wise man, very wise. He's a brutal tyrant. He was a wicked and evil fellow, but that doesn't mean that he didn't have good street sense and that he wasn't very wise. He made a very, very clever observation one time. He said, it isn't who votes that counts. It's who counts the votes that counts. And George and the Republicans know that. George and the Republicans know it. So as you can see, you have no real alternative. You have no recourse while the vessel is at sea. And once you reach port somewhere in the United States, you can then bring an action. You can file a common law action in a court of competent jurisdiction, if you can find one. That's the federal district court, by the way, where the judge wears all three hats. However, the only issue that the court could hear would be one involving fraud, and fraud is not easy to prove. And besides, there are no common law courts in the United States today. And when you go into the federal district court, that judge is going to look at you and he's going to say, excuse me, you got a social security number? You got your Siemens papers. You got a birth registration, a marriage license. You got Siemens papers. You know, maybe you were shanghaied on this ship, but you know, if you went on this ship with Siemens papers and you're going to prove fraud on the contract, so you're going to go into a summary proceeding. You're not going to go into a common law proceeding where you have rights and justice. You're going to go into an admiralty proceeding, a summary process. I often point out in my courtroom strategy and procedure case, let's picture this so that you can understand it. You receive a complaint from the state of California, and it's entitled The State of California versus Joe Finkelstein. Joe Finkelstein. What does that mean, Joe? It means that a corporation called the State of California, just the same as a corporation called General Motors or Ford or whatever corporation, California is a corporation. It's an artificial entity. It's a created being, created by another artificial entity called the United States of America, which was created by the people of the United States who incorporated it under our Constitution. That's what that is. It's a corporation, an artificial entity. And this artificial entity is suing Joe Finkelstein, and they can bring a criminal or a civil action against him in admiralty. They don't want to bring an action against him at the common law, because if they brought one at the common law, they couldn't convict him. In order for the state of California to convict you, they have to bring the action in admiralty. Otherwise, if you had your common law rights available to you, number one, you'd go to the grand jury, and a jury of your peers probably wouldn't even indict you. They wouldn't agree with the law either, because the jury decides both the law and the facts at the common law. That's why they've taken our juries away from us. So the state of California brings an action against you, Joe, and they take you into whose court? Isn't it the state of California Superior Court? So Joe Finkelstein is being complained about by the state of California, and the state of California brings Joe into the California Superior Court. They don't bring you into the courts in any other jurisdiction where you might get a fair trial. They're going to bring you into a California court. Who's sitting on the bench, Joe? Well, isn't that a California judge, and isn't he being paid by the state of California every Friday? So you've got a California court and a California judge being paid by the state of California. Who makes the rules for this court that's being convened against you, Joe, and prosecuting you, Joe, in California? Isn't it the state of California? Isn't it the board of directors, the legislature, that is making the rules of court that you have to abide by? Who's prosecuting you, Joe? Isn't the prosecutor called the prosecuting attorney? And isn't he hired by and paid for by the state of California? And isn't he a licensed bar member? Licensed by the state of California? Hey, Joe, who's testifying against you? Isn't it a policeman, an agent of the state, who gets his paycheck every Friday like the judge and the prosecutor from the state of California? Now, let's see. You're being complained about by the state of California. You're being prosecuted in a court created by and rules that are set down by the plaintiff, the state of California. The guy that's presiding over this court in the state of California is being paid every Friday. His paycheck comes from the plaintiff, the state of California. The prosecutor is being paid for by the plaintiff, the state of California. And the policeman, who is the witness against you, he's being paid for by the state of California. Now, this nice judge sits up there and says, now, Joe, you might not understand the process that's being instituted against you. And in that case, we're going to supply you with a public defender, a licensed bona fide attorney who has gone to school here in the state of California and has been licensed by the state of California and is being paid by the state of California to represent you, Joe. Why don't you declare yourself to be legally incompetent and accept the public defender? Boys and girls, now let's look at this. The state of California, a corporation brings a charge or an allegation against you, brings you into the state of California's court in front of the state of California's judge, in front of the state of California's prosecutor, to be testified against by the state of California's witness, and to be defended by the state of California's defense attorney. And my God, you call this a fair trial? Have we taken leave of our senses? Are we totally insane? You know, there was a time under the common law when the state of California brought an action against you. They brought you before 23 members of the public, called the grand jury. And the grand jury looked at the evidence that this corporation called the state of California brought against you and decided whether or not they would indict you. That was a protection against the state. Then instead of a prosecuting attorney, we used to have district attorneys that were elected by the local people in the community. And the local people in the community paid the district attorney, not the state of California paying the prosecuting attorney. And this guy prosecuted you for the people in the local community, paid for by the people in the local community under the common law. Then, when the state brought their policemen in, you had an opportunity to bring in counsel of your choice. It could be your friend Bob or Joe Finkelstein or anybody else. Not today. By God, today you got to have a licensed California attorney represent you, or you got to represent yourself. Well, I say, boys and girls, you know it's time for you to get a law school education, learn how to defend yourself, learn how to represent yourself, become legally competent. Time was when we didn't have to be legally competent. We could go hire an attorney, an independent attorney. There aren't any independent attorneys in America. They're all agents of the state. It's all licensed by the state. The judiciary is no longer independent. They're hired and bought and paid by the state. Now, they're still the best thing we've got going, because other than that, we've got politics, and the politicians are on the take. They're taking bribes, for crying out loud. Not to say that some judges aren't taking bribes, but then, by and large, I haven't seen a wholesale case of that. I have seen a couple of them taking bribes, but I haven't seen the whole judiciary doing it. All right, you can file an action in admiralty where the proper issues are against the unlawfulness of the voyage itself from its inception pursuant to the positive law of the law of nations. All issues will address the subject of jurisdiction based on the fact that the voyage, this is the quasi-contract, was a nullity ab initio. Now you would have a proper cause of action filed in a court of competent jurisdiction. So you're not going to the common law, you're going to admiralty. Remember, the possibilities are truly pregnant, because we can prove several violations of the general maritime law of all nations which are developed or were developed to protect the merchants and to enhance commerce, and which are laws that all maritime courts in the world are bound by. I want to underline the words here. Commerce, remember, merchants and commerce. Merchants and commerce, by the way, are the Canaanite traffickers spoken of in the Bible. All right, now the same people who said, give me the Federal Reserve Charter and we will see that there is stability to our economy, forced us into a recession in 1921 by a contraction of the Federal Reserve requirements of the fractional reserve to the various banks. This contracted the money supply, and by increasing the reserve requirement from 15 to 20%, a huge liquidity squeeze was forced in 1929, which brought on the Great Depression. This then precipitated our inability to pay off the interest on the debt to the Federal Reserve. So as a result, in 1933, Congress entered the United States into bankruptcy by the suspension of the payment of debt in gold as mandated by House Joint Resolution 192. That Great Depression, boys and girls, was engineered, just like the next Great Depression is being promoted and being engineered by Ben Helicopter Bernanke. And this one act terminated national federal common law. It breached the floodgates, which held the maritime law at the tidelands with the ebb and flow of the tide, and it permitted maritime admiralty law and its jurisdiction to sweep over the American people like a tidal wave. And all because we substituted the payment of debt in lawful gold with a discharge of debt under limited liability in maritime. That's what Federal Reserve notes are, boys and girls. Limited liability in maritime contract. Well, now, it doesn't take a real smart fella to figure out that if we want to get our liberty back, we've got to get back our gold and silver coin, and we've got to start buying, selling, and trading at law and paying our debts at law and become responsible for our actions once again. Boys and girls, people on welfare are not responsible for their actions. Hell, they can't even feed themselves. Those people are wards of the state, and they're going to remain wards of the state. People that are on Social Security are wards of the government, and they're going to remain that way. They don't have any incentive to get off of the dole. They'll get off the dole when the economy collapses and when their dollars won't buy a loaf of bread in a hyperinflation. They'll get off the dole and starve to death. They won't be able to take care of themselves. They won't have any means to take care of themselves. The only people that are going to take care of themselves are those that obey God, keep His commandments, and take responsibility for their actions and start paying their debts at law and become legally competent. this one act, remember, terminated our national federal common law. And it breached the floodgates which held the maritime law at the tidelands. George Rapp's Harmony Communist Religious Society, which was operated for economic profit, the insurance companies, and the Federal Reserve are all the same in their operation, as in each include the following. It's called a pool of assets with limited liability, which is insurance. A policy of survivors take all, which is tontine. It's a wagering policy with no accountability to the members or to the subscribers. Now, the Federal Reserve is an eleemosynary trust. Eleemosynary trust. It's a religious trust. It cannot be audited. It has never been audited. It is not being audited. It is not going to be audited. And that's because it is not auditable. Now, how do you like that? And you want to do business with a gang of criminals? Often ask students. I say, do any of you people in here do business with the Cosa Nostra or with Murder Incorporated or with the Mafia? And they look at you like you're stupid, you know. Of course we don't do business with criminals like that. Well, why in the world would you do business with the United States government or any of its subdivisions or agencies or states? In this state of Missouri, just to kind of give you an illustration, we have a thing here called a car title loan. It was authorized by our legislature, and the legislature created this special type of company called a car title company. And you take your car title in, and you put it up as collateral for a loan, which is violates the law of God coming out of the chute, but they charge interest on that. That violates the law of God coming out of the chute. But then this interest is 9.9% a month, which is not only outrageous, it's 118% a year. My God, I have never heard of the Mafia or the Cosa Nostra in any of its loan sharking operations that ever charged 118% a year, authorized by government. Now, you talk about a criminal enterprise over here. Hell, the state of Missouri has a criminal enterprise that so far outstrips the Mafia as to make them look like a bunch of damn pikers. And you want to do business with a gang of criminals like that? And then go to church, of course, every Sunday and sing praises to Jesus, who asked you plainly, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? And one of the things which he said in Matthew 19 was to obey God and keep his commandments. Let me just cite that for you, Matthew 19. A young fellow came over to him one time and said, hey, what do I need to do, good master? What do I need to do so that I can have eternal life? And one guy came to him, it's in verse 16, this is Matthew 19:16. Behold, one came and said to him, well, good master, what good thing shall I do that I may have eternal life? And he said to him, well, why do you call me good? There's none good but God. And that's this: if you will enter into life, keep the commandments. Huh? And you're gonna do business with a gang that authorizes and charges 118% interest a year? Held, usury is strictly prohibited. Usury is a theft crime. It's the only theft crime punishable by death. Usury. The only theft crime punishable by death. That's how bad it is. Got that from God himself. Number 5, property is pledged to the pool. And number 6, forfeiture is in order for withdrawal. You know, if you withdraw from Social Security, you forfeit everything that you put into it. What you're putting into Social Security is property pledged to a pool. There's no accountability to the members of Social Security or subscribers. Social Security is a tontine wagering scheme. Social Security is limited liability, which is insurance and strictly prohibited, and it's a pool of assets. And it's your taxpayer identification number. Now, that's what you're involved with there. Now, in the George Rapp Society, people and property were pledged to the pool. In Tontine, premium payments were pledged to the pool. In the Federal Reserve, premium payments, people and property are pledged to the pool. In the George Rapp Society, it was labor, interest, and intransmissibility of property to their heirs. You can't transmit the money that you've put into Social Security to your heirs. In Tontine, it was the premiums and the interest thereon. In the Federal Reserve, it is Social Security, unemployment premiums, property taxes. For example, what happens if you withdraw from Social Security or from unemployment insurance, or you stop paying property taxes? Isn't that a forfeiture then that's demanded? Don't you forfeit your farm, your house, or your property? In the Rapp Society, lists national economy was practiced on a small scale. In the Federal Reserve System, lists national economy is regulating and controlling our economy nationally and indeed worldwide, because every nation in the world uses American dollars as their reserve currency. In the Rapp Society, there was no risk to the insurer, George Rapp and Associates. In the Federal Reserve System, there's no risk to the maritime lender or insurance underwriter called the Federal Reserve. No risk at all, zero. The taxpayers of America have underwritten, have gone surety for the Federal Reserve. And you want to stay in that program? Well, don't let me get in the way now of your happiness and success. But go back to Deuteronomy 28:68 and remember this, that when America goes insolvent, can't pay its debts, you're going to be sold to the Ethiopians, the Libyans, and the Egyptians for your debt. That's why I suggest that you get the hell out of Dodge while there's still time to get out and start paying your debts at law, like God told you to do, and get control of your financial and your legal lives so that you've got an argument to make and you've got protection that's due you under the old covenant contract. Now, God himself said, I'll be an enemy to your enemies and an adversary to your adversary. And if you do this and you lose anything in the process, I'll pay you 100 times the amount of the liquidated damages now in this time. I'll cite that for you. That's in Mark 10, verse 28. That's just in case you thought, well, geez, if I leave Social Security and give up all of my pension benefits at United Airlines, then I'm going to be a loser. Peter said to the Messiah, he said, we've left all and we have followed you. And Jesus answered and said, well, truly I say to you, there's no man. Got that? No. What is it about no man that you're having a problem with? That's everybody, everyone, that has left house or brethren or sisters or father or mother or wife or children or lands for my sake and the gospel. But he shall receive 100-fold now in this time, houses and brethren and sisters and mothers and children and lands with persecution, and in the world to come eternal life. Now there's your benefits. Now there's your choice to be made. Want to stay with Social Security and 118% interest in the state of Missouri? I imagine you probably got that 118% interest thing all over America. I see these car title companies in California now. Crime, boys and girls, is crime. Admiralty is crime. Social Security is crime. Birth registration, marriage licenses, and business licenses are criminal activities that violate the law of God and destroy your rights under the Ten Commandments and the Constitution and Bill of Rights. That's the bottom line. We are, as they say, the proximate cause of our own injury. We have made our own bed. And in 1 Samuel chapter 8, about verse 19 or 20, God said, you know, you're going to cry out to me because of this king that you have set over you, this George Bush fellow that you voted in and set over you. And when you cry out to me in that day, I will not hear you. Well, we're about out of time, children. Time to wrap it up. Let me remind you that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.